Ladies and gentlemen, welcome wrestling fans worldwide to Knoxville and the Great Smoky Mountains for the Ron Fuller Tennessee Studcast.
6 feet 9 inches tall, 265 pounds.
This historic podcast from one of the most respected and successful wrestlers and promoters will follow the footsteps of the largest and oldest wrestling family on the planet.
Listen to what I'm saying. That's right. Bring that camera in here a little bit closer.
Through 93 years and four generations.
The stud has arrived.
Old school or new fan, this unique broadcast will educate and captivate as Ron details decades of professional wrestling's growth with truly unforgettable stories.
I want those people out there at home to hear the stud.
Sit back and enjoy the ride with the Tennessee Stud.
The Tennessee Stud. You will learn that name. You will remember it.
And now,
the stud is here.
All right, here we go. Welcome in, everybody. It's David Summers hosting another Studcast with the Tennessee Stud, Ron Fuller. Here comes the story of wrestling in America as told by the stud, whose family started the profession over 100 years ago. So now, let's step back into the ring and back into time. Let's get wall-to-wall and tree-top tall with the Tennessee Stud in the Great Smoky Mountains of Tennessee. All right, I got to tell you, Ron, congratulations are in order again today. Your last Studcast, number 371, broke another all-time record. Obviously, Studcast listeners are still growing every week, just like the thousands of fans were in Southeastern in the last episode. As the territory set all-time attendance records with a never-before-done card with, for the first time ever, three world champions defending on the same event. That was absolutely epic, in my opinion.
Well, you know, I didn't hear anybody during the course of the week, and I assume that neither did you, Dave. about that territory, you know, and about that card with three world titles being on it and it being the only time it was ever done. So I feel pretty comfortable that now I think I know for sure Southeastern Wrestling down on the Gulf Coast in October 1980. We did something that had never been done before, and that record probably includes the entire wrestling world, man, yep. Back in the territory.
I believe that, yeah.
So the Southeastern Tennessee territory at one time was recognized by many NWA territory owners as the best little territory in the world. And after an 18-month struggle, it had just closed its doors forever a couple of months earlier. Then the other Southeastern territory on the Gulf Coast was headed basically in the opposite direction. And, you know, in its last Studcast, including these three more triple world championship events. And then this Studcast, the Southeastern Gulf Coast territory, was shattering records, man. And there was the records of the Tennessee territory that we were shattering. We are going to soon be recognized as they were about to start calling us the new best little territory in the world. So it was in no way a big territory in size where we were. It was from east to west, only slightly more than 200 miles wide. Basically, it went from Panama City west to Mobile, Alabama, and from north to south, it was only about 200 miles too, from Montgomery south to Pensacola, which was on the Gulf Coast. So in October 1980, and on its way... It was on its way to becoming, man, the best little territory in the world. It had five of the largest, and I'm sure it never looked at this day, but pretty amazing. I went and looked at some figures here because I wanted to find out just how small the territory was. Mm-hmm. So in the five largest cities, it had a combined population of only 762,000 people.
Wow.
Basically, fewer people than Birmingham alone had.
Yeah, yeah.
So during the first six events of nine of these nine total double and triple world championship cards, the territory grew drew 34,000 fans. That was almost 5% of the entire population of those six cities. So that meant that basically about 5 out of every 100 people living down there in that territory were at those matches.
That is a staggering figure right there. So no wonder Southeastern would soon be called the new best little territory in the world. Hey, we're going to talk about the last three of those 9 total days in this studcast, I understand. So how important do you think this 9-day run of sellout crowds was for the reputation of the new Southeastern?
Well, we definitely, man, tapped into some new potential customers, man, for sure. And that might have never reached people we would have never reached otherwise, unless it was something that had never been done before, like this card was. And as a result, the crowds had everybody in the wrestling business talking, and especially all the wrestlers and the owners.
All right. So, to me, this studcast already off to a great start. We haven't even been going 5 minutes. And I know there has to be so much more coming with the last three of the 9 total double and triple world championship cards. All right. So where are we riding today, Stud?
Well, this studcast, man, is going to be truly loaded, though. We're going to jump into Southeastern and those last three remaining world championship events. Last week's studcast ended with the special learning tree question, and the gentleman asked about a special referee being assigned to the two remaining NWA world title matches between Harley and myself. And it was a very suspicious referee, basically, to handle those two matches. And the fact that I didn't really find out about until the day of the TV show, and that's going to be in this week's studcast. So I'd had little knowledge of what was going on there. So this TV show is even more loaded with stars than the last week's TV show. And that's pretty hard to say because this time we're going to have two of the three world champions that we saw last week all doing recorded ones. We're going to have all three of them live on the actual television show. So I'm going to finish with the results of the last three world championship events. Then we're going to go back and we'll add up all the figures for the entire 9 days, giving everyone the total attendances. And we're going to do something that I've never done before. We're going to add up Harley's payoffs, all 5 of them, from what he got. And we'll compute what that number was equal to in today's money. Cool. And then with time permitting, Dave, we maybe going to have to hopefully another learning tree question.
That is so cool. I love the Harley payoff calculations, but I'll be very surprised if we get to a learning tree question with as much as you got going on here today. All right. This is going to be a lot of fun, Stud. So how do you start it off?
Well, I think a great place to start off, man, is kind of where we left off in the last studcast. Finding out that I was headed basically into my last two chances at beating Harley Race and becoming NWA world champion. And this time it was with a special referee for both of those matches. And that referee happened to be a wrestler who had been my father's worst enemy. In 1958 in Mobile, Alabama, and again in 1965 in Atlanta, Georgia, this guy and my dad drew two of the largest crowds in the history of Southern wrestling. And that special referee for two of those most important matches in my career was none other than Mario Galento. And by sheer coincidence, he had been appointed by the Southeastern Wrestling Commissioner, Don Curtis, who turned out to be a personal friend of the NWA champion, Harley Race.
All right, this had to be one of the biggest surprises in your life as a wrestler, and you didn't even find it out until the day before the first of the two remaining world title matches that you had with Harley. One in Pensacola and the other in Mobile. All right, so what card are you going to be giving us for the second week in October, taking us back to 1980?
Well, Pensacola had a great card, but I'm only going to describe the title match waft that card in Pensacola because Galindo was the referee, and that then it was a really controversial match. And then I'm going to focus on basically the Mobile, Alabama card, which is again in the main arena, which is a week later than the match from the week before. And it was on Tuesday, October 14th, 1980. And we had eight matches again on that card. So the opening match on that card on Mobile, big arena, was Charlie Cook against Iron Mike Masters. Ricky Fields was taking on the Mongolian Stomper, managed by Big C, number one. Then the United States Junior Heavyweight title match was next. Jerry Stubbs, the champion, defending against Norvell Austin. And there was a special Texas death match. Bob Armstrong facing Ron Bass. And a return match for the Southeastern Tag Championship. There was a tornado rules match with put all four men in the ring at the same time. And there were new champions, Joe LeDuc and Robert Fuller. They're going to be defending against the former champions, Big C, one and two. Then they got to the three championship matches, world championships. For the ladies' world title, the champion Fabulous Moolah was wrestling Judy Martin. For the world junior heavyweight championship, Les Thornton was facing Ricky Gibson. And for the 10 pounds of gold in the NWA World Heavyweight Championship, Harley Race was wrestling me. And the special referee was Mario Galindo.
Okay, I got to tell you, that's a fantastic card right there. So, all right, Ron, it is time to tell us about this week's TV show. It had all three world champions on it. So how did this TV show open up?
Well, it opened up with Southeastern Commissioner Don Curtis and NWA World Champion Harley Race live. Just the two of them in a separate studio with nothing between them but the 10 pounds of gold, the belt that Harley was carrying. And Curtis welcomed the champion, and he plugged the fact that there was going to be three world champions on this TV show today, and they were all going to be in the studio. And then they talked briefly about the triple world title cards with Harley, made a big point of congratulating his good buddy, Don Curtis, for putting together something as big as these spectacular events. So then Harley told everybody that he'd already successfully defended his belt against Ron Fuller three times in the past week, and still he had two more title matches in front of him before he finished off with me and got gone from the Southeastern Territory. So, and he said he was not going to be able to stay for the entire show today because he was defending his belt in Florida that night. But he said he had a special surprise for me gonna happen later in the TV show. So Don Curtis and Harley patted each other on the back and were all smiles when Curtis kind of threw it to Charlie Platt and Les Thatcher in the other main studio on the normal set. And the studio audience, they weren't so inspired with what Curtis and Harley had to say. So they let them know basically with a big roar. So a roar of boos. And that wasn't exactly what that I'm sure those two guys was expecting. So Les asked Charlie if he had any idea what Harley's surprise was for me. And Charlie said he didn't. I didn't know either what was about to happen. But he said that I was scheduled to be on the personality profile and they'd find out then. And so they both then ran down this spectacular TV card, which was truly spectacular. Then they welcomed Judy Martin for their first guest of the day. They welcomed her to the set. Mm-hmm. And they threw it to the ring announcer for the introduction of the first match of the day. And that happened to be none other than the world's ladies champion, Fabulous Moolah. And Judy Martin was sitting at the set with them because she's going to be wrestling Moolah in this upcoming last 3 days, mm-hmm. three shows. Mm-hmm. So the TV studio fans, they didn't know exactly what they thought about her. You know, I don't think the fans there had seen Moolah too many times.
Right.
In that Dothan area. But wow, if you did, you didn't like her. The fans didn't like her. She was tremendous heel. She paid no attention to him, though, at all. She didn't care. And she performed her normal destruction of her opponent. And that's it. I guess that's a polite way of putting it. So Judy Barton, you know, her upcoming world title opponent, couldn't help, but she had to praise her. I mean, first she was trained by her for one reason. She was trained by Moolah. So was most of the great lady wrestlers at that time. And so Judy Martin, you know, had to say, wow, she's a great wrestler. You know, you got to admit that. So when the match was over, Moolah brought her belt. She had put her belt in the corner. She got her belt and she came right out of the ring and she went right to the set and she got in the face and the psyche, man, of her future opponent. Cause she was using some choice words before she told the choice words to the studio audience. They started booing her and she had a few words for the studio audience as well. She was a nasty lady.
I only got to see her a couple of times, but she was in a class of her own. I mean, she had a run as champion that I have, maybe you know how long, but I don't know. It had to be a record. I would not have wanted to get in the ring with her, with the fabulous Moolah. I don't know any man that would. All right, so what about the next TV segment? Take us there.
Well, Robert and Gilda Duke came out of the dressing room, and they had just basically won a few days earlier the Southeastern Tag Team belts, and they came out of the dressing room headed to the set, and they held the belts over their heads. Yeah, and the studio audience wasn't even aware that they were the new champions, obviously. They won the belts during the course of the week. So, wow, the studio went crazy, man. They were like, son of a gun, look who's champion. So they went to the set and they watched their match, the winning title match from the week before. And in this match, Plowboy Frazier, who was upset with the loss of his friend Floyd a couple weeks earlier in the match with Rob, he came to the ring to help the champions, Big C, hold on to their belts. And I don't know what his plan was, but it backfired on him for sure. And not only did he not help them, he actually cost the Big C's their belts. So they weren't very happy about that for sure. And so the studio crowd, they really enjoyed the video. And then they showed both masked men. At the end of this, mm-hmm. after Rob and LeDuc left the match, left the ring with their belts, mm-hmm. Big C's attacked Plowboy. And they stomped him and they pretty well left him laying there. And in fact, Joe and Rob had to go back and kind of get him off of Plowboy, to get him to go to the dressing room. And so Plowboy was left laying there in the middle of the ring. And it took a lot of people to carry Plowboy out of the ring.
It took a forklift. What are you talking about? Okay, so I tell you, even with his huge size, you had to feel a little bit for him. I mean, he was a kind of a pathetic person, I guess you would say. All right, so who was in the next live match?
Well, the former champions, Big C, but they weren't definitely not getting the day off. And in this match, their opponents were Charlie Cook and Norvell Austin, which were a great team, man. And so Les asked Rob and Joe if they'd like to stay and watch this match. So obviously they're wrestling these guys in this upcoming week. And they said, sure, they would. And they were going to be defending their belts in a return match. And they were going to be a special tornado tag, had all four men in the ring. So they said, sure, well, we'd love to. What a great tag match that turned out to be, too, man. It lasted more than 20 minutes. And it forced the Big C's to go to some extremes to even try to win. So the referee got in the way of the action, and he accidentally got ran into by both Norvell and Big C number two at the same time. All three of them went down. Big C won. He never missing an opportunity, man. Loaded his black glove, and he let Charlie Cook have a taste of the old peanut butter that he was famous for, man. And he covered him with no referee, though, right? The referee wasn't nowhere to be found.
Wow.
So then the huge plowboy came into the studio. He didn't come into the studio where the wrestlers entered. He came in the studio from where the fans entered. And he went straight to the ring, and he stomped Big C in the back. Big C had covered Charlie Cook for the pin, and plowboy stomped him in the back. He picked him up. He slammed him, ran to the ropes, and came off, and he splashed Big C, man, with that 400-plus pounds. Then he put Charlie Cook on top of him, and he left the ring. Referee never saw him, and he exited out the same door he came in. And so the referee finally crawled over, and he covered, counted out Big C. And the studio crowd went crazy, man. And haven't seen what just happened before. So did Rob and Joe. They were like, wow, Plowboy got even. You know, so they were singing Plowboy's praises, man, and wondering where this might be headed.
All right. I mean, already turning into a great TV show. So now the personality profile was coming. I think Charlie said earlier that you were on that personality profile.
Yes, I definitely was, man. And I had my Southeastern belt with me. Charlie was on one side and Les was on the other. And we talked about the first three world title matches that I'd already had with Harley Race in the first 5 days that he had been there, which was in the last week that we had just passed. And, you know, and every one of those three matches end up in 1 hour time limit draws. And also we talked about the fact that I had two more chances basically coming in the next 3 days. So Les reminded me that earlier Harley was going to have to leave the studio to wrestle in Florida that night, which he had said on his first interview. But he was leaving me some kind of big surprise. So none of the three of us had seen it yet. Didn't really know what the heck was the big surprise. So Charlie said to Harley, you know, Charlie said Harley had done a video before leaving the station. After he did that opening video in the course of the first two matches, he cut a video and left it at the station there to be played, I guess, for right this point, me sitting there and for the personality profile.
Right.
And so Charlie asked me if I'd like to see it. I mean, of course I'd like to see it, you know. And so, and I thought, you know, I got to say that none of the three of us were ready for what we were about to see. So when the video opened up, Harley was standing alone with his belt. And he had a big grin on his face, and he said in the first three matches that we had against each other here in Southeastern already, he said Ron Fuller had not tried to cheat, but he says, you know, Ron Fuller knows how to cheat. And he said, that wasn't going to happen in those last two matches because I was going to try to do whatever it took to take the 10 pounds of gold. You know, he's not going to work for him. You know, and then he kind of reminded fans, he goes, right here in this part of the country, if you people think back a couple of years, Ron Fuller was a heel. Ron Fuller was a no good, crooked snake. You know, and he said, deep down, he's still a no good snake. You know, so he said, my good friend Don Curtis has already left the building. He said, he knows exactly what I mean, you know, when I say that. And he says, he doesn't want to see, my friend Don Curtis doesn't want to see the world title change hands in a crooked way. So he said, Mr. Curtis, you know, has decided that he needed to assign a special referee for these last two NWA world title matches between you and I, meaning me. He knows that I'm looking at this video as he's doing it. So he's there between you, Ron, and me, you know, and he. So he said, and he has chosen the perfect man. He says, he's chosen somebody with real honesty and integrity and decency. And he's going to make sure that you, Ron Fuller, do not cheat your way to being world champion. And he says, as a matter of fact, here he is. And he is our special referee for the last two NWA world title matches. But nobody had seen him to this point, you know. So. Mm-hmm. Into the shot came somebody that I hadn't seen in 15 years since I was a junior in high school. And and it was Mario Galinto.
Wow.
And Mario was the worst enemy of my father on the face of the planet. I mean, wow. I mean, so Galinto was all smiles, and basically he only said four words. He said, payback is hell. So there was a gasp from the studio crowd. They were sitting right next to us. The profile set was sitting right next to the bleachers. And those people that knew him, they were never going to forget Mario Galinto. Nobody looked like Galinto. And when Charlie blurted out the name, most of the rest of them kind of responded too. And some of those said, gosh, oh, that's what Mario Galinto looks like. So all three of us on the profile, we were pretty much speechless, just looking at each other in shock, like, wait a minute, why am I? So finally, Les managed to say, you know, he says, so, and he's kind of asking a question, but he was making a statement too. And he says, so Mario Galinto is going to be refereeing the next two matches for the NWA World Championship?
Right. So, wow.
And so Charlie says to me, he says, this can't be true, because your father and Mario Galinto, he said, they've been feuding for 22 years, and now Mario Galinto is going to be the referee for your next two shots at Harley Race for the World Championship next
week.
Yeah. So I was totally speechless. I was like, I was blown away. So Rob came to the set. He almost running came out there, and he says to Charlie, he goes, is this a joke? He goes, and if it isn't, he said, whose idea is this? Who, what's going on? You know? And, you know, what could I say about this? I mean, the decision obviously is already made. And even if it made no sense, I couldn't do nothing to change it at this point. And, so other than to give up the two matches and not have to take my chances at winning the title, I wasn't about to do that. So basically, profile closed with nothing basically but a lot of questions.
All right, I got to see if you can set this straight for me. I'm seeing a picture of Mario Galinto, and his face is just covered in blood. Was that one of the matches with your father back in the day?
Yes, sir. It certainly was, man. They had a couple of them.
Yeah,
we'll be talking about actually that and we're going to get to that. So, yeah,
okay.
Wow, it was a very very different personality profile.
Was that in a baseball arena setting years before?
One of them in the baseball arena and the other in a football stadium.
I remember you telling that story. Okay. All right. So you're right. This had to be the craziest personality profile ever. I bet the studio crowd was buzzing about it. The rest of the TV show, they had to be. All right. So how do you follow something like that? Who was up next, Stud?
Well, Jerry Stubbs joined Charlie and Les at the main set. And obviously he had seen what just went down. And the first thing out of his mouth was, he said something like, you know, he said, you know, and they thought he said, I was a bad choice for a referee a few weeks back, because wonder how those two world title matches between Fuller and Harley are going to end up with Mario Galinto as a referee. Right? So he had been a referee recently and, he had a little comment right away. So, and Stubbs, you know, he was too self-obsessed, man, to really care. Was only there, as usual, to complain. That's why he came to the set. And this time he was going to be complaining about Ricky Gibson, because Ricky Gibson was going to get these last three title shots at the World Junior Heavyweight Champion, Les Thornton. Even though, you know, and Stubbs did left out the fact, he said, he's going to get all three of these matches. Well, why don't I get them, Charlie? What's the deal here? And so Charlie brought up to his attention, he goes, well, Jerry, he goes, You had the first six against him. You had a whole week of them, and you didn't win the championship.
Wow. All right. So, I mean, to me, that sounds just like Stubbs. Who was in the next TV match? Let me guess. Was it Ricky Gibson?
Yeah, man. And Ricky was very excited, man, about the opportunity to wrestle against the World Junior Heavyweight Champion. Of course he was, man. And so in this match, it didn't take him long to finish off his opponent. You could see he was primed, man. He was ready. And he won, man, with one of those beautiful drop kicks off the top rope. I love to watch him do that, man. And every time he ever did it, that I saw him do it, he didn't just flatten guys. He sent them flying out of the ring one way or another. He had to go out and pick the guy up off the concrete and throw him back into the ring and then go in and cover him to get the pin. So normally, Dave, somewhere around this time in the show, mm-hmm. we take our break. But I got so much ahead, man, to cover in this one. I think we're just going to have to continue. We're going to take a break in our next cast.
I don't think that's going to be a problem. Let's just keep cruising right on through. This is all so very interesting. So how about the last segment of the TV show? Keep it on a roll.
Well, it was the second world champion, to wrestle on this show that day. The World Junior Heavyweight Champion, Les Thornton, was basically as good as they get, man. God, what a great wrestler he was. Ricky Gibson, after getting his win, the match right before that, and Stubbs having left the set already, he got a chance to go to the set and watch this last match with his opponent that he's going to be wrestling in the next 3 nights in a row. So, and he joined Charlie and Les at the set and him for the comments about Thornton's match. And immediately after Thornton's win, Thornton picked up his championship belt. He had taken it to the ring, just like Moolah did, and he laid it in his corner. He got his championship belt, and he went straight to the set. And Les Thornton was a class act, man. He was really, really a sharp dude. And what a great guy he was. And he shook Ricky's hand, and he wished him luck. He said, I've heard a lot about you. I've never wrestled you before. But, he goes, I know you're a good guy. And he goes, I'm looking forward to competing with you and good luck. And fans, we're going to see basically three classic clean wrestling matches in the next 3 nights because these two guys really, really were going to tear the house down in an all clean match. So as the show was about to go off the air, mm-hmm. Bob Armstrong, Joe LeDuc, came to the set, and they expressed their concern for what Don Curtis was doing here. You know, they were kind of still blown away like I was, you know, and they were like, what's he doing allowing Mario Glento to referee such an important match as these two world title matches between Harley and Ron? They go that, you know, so Bob Armstrong even had enough time. There was a little couple of minutes there at the end of the show. So Bob even told a little short story that kind of gave those that didn't know anything about Mario Glento an idea of how wrong this was to have him referee in this match. So Bob told everybody about being on the card in Atlanta, Georgia, the night the biggest crowd to ever see a wrestling match in the history of Georgia wrestling. And it still was. It happened in 1965, and in 1980, it was still the biggest crowd in the history of Georgia wrestling. It was in a baseball stadium, and then the main event, he told everybody, the fans, was Buddy Fuller versus Mario Glento. And he said the referee for that match, unlike Mario Glento, was a guy that deserved it. The referee in that match was Rocky Marciano, mm-hmm. the old heavyweight boxing champion.
Yeah.
So, and then Bob said, you know, he said, I watched the match. He said, I've never seen a match as bloody as that one was. And he said, when Buddy Fuller beat Galento, he said, the crowd of more than 20,000 people literally carried him off the baseball field. He said it was unbelievable to watch.
Wow.
So then he finished. He asked Charlie and Les. He said, how do you guys think somebody after a match like that doesn't carry a grudge against that family for the rest of their life? He goes, there is no way Mario Galinto should be refereeing two upcoming NWA World Title matches with Buddy Fuller's son being in both of them.
I agree with Charlie 100% on that. I guess you would have to say this was a very controversial decision by Don Curtis, and I can't wait to hear how all the great matches ended on those remarkable cards. So I'm expecting you're going to lay all that out for us, Dud.
Well, before I get to the results of the Mobile card, I want to let everybody know how the Pensacola match that was refereed by Mario Galinto, the first one that he refereed, how that match ended. So it went as most would have expected. In the early stages, he was kind of quick counting me on the ropes. He was forcing these clean breaks against me, basically, but Harley could do whatever he wanted to do, and he was getting by with it because obviously Galinto was not going to referee these matches fair and square. So toward the end of the match, sometime basically after the 55-minute mark or so, the announcer started calling out the time remaining every minute, and I caught him. I caught Harley running off the ropes, and I scooped him up for a slam, and we both went backwards over the top rope and onto the concrete. And I don't know how long we were down there. After 50 minutes with Harley, you know, you don't know much about what's going on, just trying to get through the rest of it. And so, but we started fighting outside the ring, and Galinto refused to leave the ring. And he didn't count us out on the floor, and he didn't even come out there to try to stop it. So with less than 2 minutes remaining, Rob came down, and he grabbed Harley, and he threw him back into the ring, and then he helped me back into the ring. And so we both, as soon as we got up, we just went at it again. Now we're back in the ring fighting. So Harley stopped me, and he suplexed me, and they were calling out the last minutes on these matches. When you got to 55 minutes, they would say 4 minutes remaining, 3 minutes remaining. They called out 1 minute remaining in the match. Harley climbed up on the top rope, and he dived off head first. I'm laying there. He's suplexing me. He's got me exactly where he wanted me. And when he dived off head first, I moved. He went head first into the mat.
Wow.
So Rob was still there at ringside. When I crawled over and covered Harley, the building exploded. It's over. It's over, you know. But Galinto's standing there looking at it, right?
Yeah.
So instead of him counting Harley out, as every referee would have done, he went over. He went out on the concrete, and then he attacked Rob. And I'm laying there on top of Harley waiting for a count, a three count. So, and then Harley never moved because basically he knocked himself out when he had dived off the top rope. And so Harley just laid there, and the bell rang. Time ran out. Galinto's out there fighting with my brother on the floor. And, Galinto finally came to the ring, back into the ring. He pulled me off of Harley, and then he told the announcer to announce that the time limit had run out on the match, and it was a draw.
Wow. It sounds like he refused to count Harley Race out, period, especially after Race missed the diving headbutt off the top rope and you covered him. So I don't think the crowd was going to enjoy that much at all.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, they were mad, man. I'm really mad. And so was I, you know. But I was too weak at this point to even stand. And And Rob and a couple of other guys came down. They got me, and they kind of helped me out of the ring and back to the dressing room. And the fans, they just rushed to the ring. Looked like the building came right to the ring. And so they surrounded the ring, and Harley was just barely conscious at that point. And Galento was yelling for the police to get to the ring, into the ring. Police came to the ring. He said, get in the ring, get in here and take care of us, right?
Wow.
You know, so thank God Bob's back there, and he sees what's going on, and there's going to be a real problem here. Guys are going to get hurt. A lot of people are going to get hurt. And he ran over, and he got the rest of the heels that were there in the building to go to the ring. So get your butts down there and get them out of there. So that's how Harley and Galento were able to get back to the dressing room, basically.
Wow. All right. It really sounded like a dangerous situation. And two nights later, you were going to be doing it again in front of twice as many fans in Mobile. So what happened in those Mobile matches two nights later?
Charlie Cook beat Iron Mike Masters in the first match. Mongolian Stomper managed to beat, who was managed by Big C. He made quick work, obviously, of a much smaller and not as powerful a young guy, Ricky Fields. But I think this being on the second match, it had put a bad taste in the Stomper's mind, you know. He'd never probably been on a second match in his life or in 20 years or whatever. And a second match out of an eighth match card, I think it really got the Stomper into a bad frame of mind at this point. So in the United States Junior Heavyweight Championship match, champion Jerry Stubbs and Norvell Austin, they wrestled to a 30-minute time limit draw. Bob Armstrong and Ron Bass, they had a heck of a Texas death match, man, with it was kind of like Bob described the one of the bloodiest matches I'd ever seen.
Wow.
A whole lot of blood in this one, and there was no winner. The match was stopped when both of them, they fought back to Ron Bass's dressing room, so there was really no winner in that match at all. And they were going to be coming back the next week, man, against each other in one of those really dangerous bull rope matches that Bass was so proud of. The next match was for the Southeastern Tag Championship. That was the Tornado Tag match with all four men in the ring at the same time. And the new champions, Rob and Joe LeDuc, were against the former champions, Big C 1 and 2. And Plowboy was not even on this card, but Plowboy was in the building. And I don't know where he was hiding, but he played a major role in the Big C's not winning again. So he had already got him on TV. And he got him on this night, too. So then the first of three world title matches was next. The world's ladies champion, Fabulous Moolah, got the best, obviously, of Judy Martin. For the World Junior Heavyweight Championship, Les Thornton was defending, obviously, and we talked about it, against Rick Gibson. And, wow, what a great match they had. It was very scientific and clean. What a great exhibition of wrestling it was, man. And Thornton beat him. Thornton actually beat Ricky. Then the last match was for the NWA World Championship. Harley Race was defending for the fifth time in 9 days, you know, and it was going to be against me, the last time he was going to defend against me. Mario Galento was a special referee. And this match may have been even wilder than what happened in the Pensacola match 2 days earlier.
Wow. I mean, I don't know if that was even possible, Stud. So how do you top that Pensacola match?
Well, it kind of started from the very beginning, really. Harley and Galento, they went to the ring first. And when I came down to the ring, I had a special guest with me. And when I introduced who it was, it blew the roof off, man, that beautiful, round, big old 10,000-seat building. Many people recognized him, obviously, because he'd been wrestling there a few times in several of the cities in the territory since we started down there in 1978. But he was there a whole long time before that. And and basically, it didn't take long for them to do a lot of buzzing and figure out that I had brought somebody special with me.
All right. Who was it, Ron?
It was my dad, Buddy Fuller.
Wow. Okay.
I mean, that place went nuts, and there he was. There's Galento in the ring. There's my dad and the ringside. And so I got the announcer to introduce him, and the fans, what an ovation. I got goosebumps, man. And so I went and got him a chair, and I set him down right in my corner. He was going to be there for this whole match.
Man, what a buzz. What a moment that had to be. So I bet the building was on fire. So what did Harley and Galento think about that?
Well, they went nuts. I mean, Harley got the microphone and he threatened to leave the building. He said, if your father is going to be there, I'm not going to be wrestling, and I was like, oh no, wait just a minute here, right? I mean, when he said that, the building erupted, they booed the heck out of him. So I had the announcer get me the microphone, and I said, well, Harley, since you picked the referee, I'm going to pick my manager. So the building exploded on that one, and I continued, and I told him, and also too, Harley, I said, I just got off the phone with Sam Muchnick, president of the National Wrestling Alliance, and he said to tell you, if you didn't wrestle for any reason that you didn't wrestle tonight, that you are never going to wrestle for the NWA again. Wow, it was another big explosion.
I bet. Wow.
We were introduced at this point, and the match finally got underway. And this one didn't go nearly as long as the other matches, the other four that we had already had. And so we started fighting because at the beginning of this match, we just really tore into each other, and I think the audience kind of expected it. And Harley was leading the match, and I trusted his judgment, man. He wanted to go, and we went. So, and it seemed like nobody in the building ever sat down. It was like strange. Probably 30 minutes that everybody was standing. I'd never seen that happen, too. And so after probably about 30 minutes, it just got wilder, man. Galento, at some point there, threw a punch at me. Tried to hit me. And when he did, my dad walked down the apron of the ring and he grabbed Galento's leg and he drug him out of the ring. And I mean, he started whipping his butt. And it was like the old days, man. All hell was breaking loose.
Wow.
And so at that point, there's no referee in the ring any longer. It's just me and Harley. And I put the Fuller leg lock on Harley. Harley's not had his back turned, and he's trying to watch what's going on the floor, and the building's going crazy. And I put the Fuller leg lock on him right in the middle of the ring. And he wasn't going to get away. He couldn't get away. And he was screaming, man. And it was another example of where I should have been the world champion right there. That's it. The match was over. I had the world championship won again. This had happened to me several times. So, and then all of a sudden, guess who? That was upset with what was going on in the second match of the night. Mm-hmm. Here comes the Mongolian Stomper down. He climbs into the ring and he stomps me right in the face. And I was like, son, what are they? So here, the Stomper now, Harley and Mario Galento, bells ringing and, matches over. We had hired a bunch of extra policemen because we knew this was going to be another sellout like it had been the week before. And because of who was refereeing, there was a good chance that there was going to be a problem. And we had a brigade of policemen hired, and they got around Stomper and Harley and Galento, and they finally got them back to the dressing room all in one piece.
Well, the Stomper comes down and kind of ruins everything, but I tell you, there's no love lost between your dad and Mario Galento, and the matches, I brought this up earlier, the matches that they had back in the day were absolutely epic, and back in that time period, nobody had ever seen two go at it like those two did back in the day. So I'll tell you, Stud, this has been absolutely amazing. I'm sure we're almost out of time, but hopefully, Stud, you can still give us the final numbers for this remarkable 9-day run that had to be one of the biggest in Southeastern history.
Yeah, and you know, I want to pick up on that last little comment you made, Dave, about the two matches with my father and Mario Galento. One of them in Mobile with almost 40,000 people. This one in Atlanta with somewhere between 20 and 30,000.
Wow.
And then both of those matches, Dave, they hard-weighed each other both matches, both times. And those matches were 6 years apart, I think. And that's the photo you're talking about.
Yeah.
Mario and... That's where that came from. So, yeah, wow. Those matches that my dad and him had were just really historic, man. They did things that no wrestlers had probably ever done before.
And you told that story, by the way. I want to mention this real quick. On TNStud.com, you can go back to some of the earlier – you can go back to all the Studcast at TNStud.com. Some of the earlier Studcasts, you'll find that, and you'll see that photo – that's kind of etched in my memory. I can't even imagine a photo of Mario Galento where he's not completely bloody. But that's on TNStud.com if you want to go back. And I'm talking back how many years back? You've been doing this 5 or 6 years now?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So it's way back. But it'll be at the top of the list if you go and check it out at TNStud.com. Go ahead, Stud.
Well, since you mentioned that photo, we always run a photo.
Yeah.
Guess what my photo is going to be for this
one? For this one?
Yeah.
Galento?
Galento.
Oh, you're kidding.
After that match.
Yeah. Wow. Okay.
So yeah, let's get into the compiling what actually happened over the course of these 9 days. Pretty darn amazing, man. When I started to doing this, the further I got into it, it was like, wow, these are staggering. I mean, I didn't even realize how big these events were. So in the first 6 days, let's go back up to the week before last podcast. We took care of 6 days there. In those first 6 days, in which we had these double and triple world championship matches, we had 34,000 people in those 6 days. And in the last three nights, which was in Pensacola, we had 6,000. In Montgomery, which we were back into the smaller civic center, so we couldn't put 8,000 in there, but we put 5,500 into the smaller civic center. Mm-hmm. And in the Mobile second show, it did the same number it did in the first. They allowed us to put an extra 500 people basically into the building.
Yeah.
That had 10,500 people again. So the total attendances for the entire 9 days was 56,000 fans.
Whoa. Wow.
The gross amount for the first six nights, the first six of them in the first week was 190,500. I think we talked about that last week. In these last three nights, were almost as big as the first six. We did $142,000 in the last three nights, which meant in that 9-day total period of time, we did $332,000 in business.
And this was 1980.
1980, yes. I'm talking 1980, $332,000.
Yeah, 1980. Yeah, yeah.
Uh-huh. So I'm going to end this studcast with basically the payoff for Harley, you know, and basically this was only for 5 nights, and he only worked we only worked 5 nights out of the 9 total nights, you know, with the first, we've already talked about the first 5. This is the last 3 nights. The total gross for all of the 5 nights that I wrestled Harley in this whole time frame was $245,000. And then what we actually had was we had wow. three towns or four towns mm-hmm. that ran that were smaller towns that you know, Harley didn't wrestle in those matches. That's why these crowds were bigger.
Yeah.
Harley was in these 5. So he, along with the National Wrestling Alliance office, got 10% of the gross.
Uh-huh.
That was the deal for the National Wrestling Alliance. The champion, and you sent the money to the National Wrestling Alliance, and you really most of the time didn't know how much the Harley got paid.
Right.
Especially
right.
in years earlier when I first paid him off that first time, and I paid him in cash, and he got the $2,000. You know, I don't know exactly what Harley got out of these payoffs
yeah.
because they had changed the deal, and you sent the money into the NWA, and they paid Harley. So together they got 10% of that, which was $24,500 in today's money. And I went back and checked this out to see what that would be in today's money. In today's money, that would have been $98,000 that the NWA would have got.
Just incredible. All right. So Harley Race himself, after taking out the 10%, Harley got over $20,000 for that period of time.
Yes, he had actually more than that, you know.
Man, so, yeah. So, that is incredible. I cannot believe how much these numbers add up to. So if Harley got just half of what was sent back to the NWA, that'd still be like $49,000 in today's money for only 5 nights' work. I think he did okay on that one.
Yeah, that's basically $10,000 a night.
Yeah, yeah. Wow.
10,000 an event. That's a pretty good day payday,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, no doubt.
So basically, Dave, any way you cut it, man, these triple world championship cards was a tremendous idea, right?
That's
the way of putting it.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, you did okay on the box office, just okay. All right. I'm sorry, we are not going to have time for a learning tree question this week, but what a great studcast we have had so far. These last 2 studcasts have been absolutely amazing, and what you're working on now, Ron, is going to change everything, and for the better, no doubt about that. The traditional studcast is about to disappear and be replaced with something infinitely more appealing, and we're going to be talking about a lot more of that in the near future. All right, so where are we riding on the next studcast?
Well, we're going to check out what was happening in the old southeastern Knoxville territory. That included Ric Flair and Black Jack Mulligan, who had bought that territory. And they were going to be trying to revive a great territory that just kept slipping away, man. So I want to kind of go back every once in a while to remind those fans up there in Knoxville. They listened to what happened down south here, and I know they're feeling like, wow, what did we miss, basically. So I want to kind of keep tapping into what's going on there. And basically, they had gone, I think it was 6 weeks with no wrestling at all. So we're going to talk a little bit about that card, the first card that comes back after 6 weeks of no wrestling at all. And then we're also going to be dealing with the following great spurts, man, in the Gulf Coast Southeastern Territory. And I guess that's a good way of putting it, is spurts. I mean, this is a huge, huge climb in the in the number of people in the buildings and and the houses all of a sudden. And you know, and this is all taking place in the last two Studcasts. But what happens is we kind of have to get back to normal business. And basically, it's a really touchy thing when you're a booker of how do you follow something like 9 days of these type of deals, right? So, and you know, we had basically gotten to a new plateau. None of us ever thought we'd reach this level. So when we are going to be entering in time, you know, we'll be entering a time basically of quick change. You know, one of the things that you kind of have to do is you have to look at your crew. You have to decide, do I continue to run with the same people or do I do a big rollover? We're going to talk about that in the next Studcast. And we'll find out why a lot of territories fail after they have these monster events. They just, business dies for them. So I think that'll be interesting for fans next week to find out what the thinking was. So, and then the next card we're going to be talking about, it's a great one. It's got two lose or leave matches on it. And one of those is going to affect one of the territory stars. Hopefully we're going to get to a learning tree question too in the next one as well, Dave.
Oh, good deal. All right, folks, you know how to keep up with Ron, the Tennessee Stud. He's easy to have a conversation with. You can find Ron at Ron Fuller, the Tennessee Stud, on Facebook. Like and follow him there. Automatically become friends with a living legend on Facebook. Simple to do. Twitter or X, just as easy. Ron Fuller Welch on X, and follow him there too. Check out that fantastic website. We referenced that earlier, tnstud.com. This Studcast is going to be there. Every Studcast ever done, going back to the historic Studcast that we were talking about earlier, they're all on there too. The Stud Store is where you can get 43 super Studcasts, 4 different 8x10 photos, the best-selling novel Brutus personally autographed to you, and subscribe to Ron's YouTube channel, Southeastern Rewind. Find hundreds of hours of classic old-school wrestling entertainment right there on Southeastern Rewind on YouTube. 447 total videos. The last 150 Studcasts are there. Ask the Stud shows and short rides with the Stud. Go back 1 year or more and discover fantastic Stud stories with worldwide stars. Studcast archive stories, Tell Me More fan question shows, superstars of the past shows, and so much more. It's YouTube Southeastern Rewind. It is the best deal in wrestling, bar none. All right, any final words today, Ron?
Well, yeah, you know, I hope the fans have enjoyed this one today. Really, I've enjoyed these last couple of episodes myself, and I found out things that I didn't even realize by going back and putting together all these numbers. And so, and I hope you, if you enjoyed it, you tell your friends about us. And thanks for everybody out there for your continued support. Please take care of yourselves and others, and may God bless us all.
For Ron Fuller in the Great Smoky Mountains, I'm David Summers saying thank you for listening. Find me on Facebook at facebook.com/DSummers955. On Twitter, now known as X, Dave_Doohan. On Instagram, it's instagram.com/DavidSummersProductions. And hit me up anytime at davidsummersproductions@gmail.com. This Studcast is a David Summers production for Tennessee Stud, LLC. Thanks for joining us today for this historic Studcast. The true story continues next week. So full Nelson your friends and point them in our direction for another ride with the Tennessee Stud.
1, 2, 3.
This is David Summers saying so long from the Great Smoky Mountains.